The following is a presentation by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on September 26, 1984 at Murari Sevak Farm in Mulberry, Tennessee. His Holiness Jayapataka Swami is discussing about Srila Prabhupada Nectar.
Touching. Now, when he would drink like that, he'd say, why doesn't everyone do that? Because if you touch your lips, it becomes contaminated. And Brahmananda Swami was sitting, and he gave him some prasadam. And Brahmananda Swami put his finger in his mouth, you know, ate it. And Prabhupada said, no, you're contaminated. Go wash your hand. He'd go out, washed his hand, came back again. Then again, another piece. Again, he touched. Go back, now wash your hand. Like this, until finally he could take it and had to throw it in the mouth without touching. Then he wouldn't insist he had to wash his hand. But if he touched, then he had to wash. This is a basic principle of puja or something, that if you touch your mouth, you have to wash. So when you drink, if every time you drink, you have to wash your hand, it gets to be troublesome. So if you can drink without touching, then you don't have to wash. There's a reason behind it. So, I remember that one time Srila Prabhupada, when he arrived from Mayapur, he came into his room, and he leaned back on his seat, put his legs up on the desk. He just like relaxed. He took his water glass, and from high he drank the water, and without touching, he said, ah, Mayapur water. And he said, Mayapur, the spiritual kingdom. He says, living or dying in Mayapur, it's all the same. Living in Mayapur, you're living in the spiritual world. And if you die in Mayapur, you go back to the spiritual world. One time, just when the building was still just barely usable, the main building where Prabhupada's residence was. At that time, we had finished Prabhupada's bathroom, but the plastering and thing, it wasn't 100% finished, but more or less something was usable. So, all of a sudden, that night, about 9 o'clock, I heard Prabhupada yelling out, Jayapataka! 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 So then, I ran to the bathroom. I forget what else, but I remember he would name, at least called my name once. He might have called other names. And I went, and then there, Prabhupada was inside the bathroom. A little 4 feet by 5 foot cubicle. And in the door, there was a 3 foot long viper. Deadly poisonous, which was stuck in the far crack of the door where the hinge was, and it was striking out at Prabhupada, just falling short about 6 inches. So then I took the door, I scrunched it. Then I just opened it enough so then Prabhupada could, if I scrunched it, then it lost its spring a little bit, and then crushed it, you know, in the door. And then Prabhupada eased out along the far side of the wall, came out, and then he opened the door and finished off the snake. Then Prabhupada pointed up, and there on the wall, there was the mate of the snake. Tried to catch it, but then it crawled into the chute where all the plumbing was, going from the ground floor up to the, you know, it was like a plumbing chute. He couldn't get out. He looked for days, hours, you know, couldn't find it. Prabhupada said that maybe someone planted the snakes there. Didn't know. But apart from crying out, when he was crying out, it wasn't like a normally, like a real, it was still a, wasn't like a, you know, wasn't a fearful cry, but it was an intense cry. And through the whole, you know, Prabhupada was very completely composed the whole time. And we had to call loudly for someone to hear him, but it wasn't, he never, you know, for a moment became, lose his composure in any way. Remember one time Prabhupada was sitting in his room and some devotee was chanting japa and walking back and forth outside the room. Then he rang his bell and called him. And he said, what mantra is he chanting? What is this? Hari Nix 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 Nam. Apparently Srila Prabhupada would tend not to chastise his devotees in the Western temples very much. We had a special rasa with Srila Prabhupada in India that when he came there, after the first couple of days, he would, almost like a temple president, he would practically be our GBC president, in a sense of, like our GBC practice. He'd come and if he didn't like something, he would chastise us for it. So, most of the other leaders, they knew that this was like some special rasa. But sometimes when we get chastised, some leader would think it was funny or something. Or instead of, I remember one time Prabhupada was walking in a morning walk, taking a tour. And there was, we had a circular bathroom. There were quite a few devotees there, so there were actually 10 latrines in the external part of the bathroom and 10 showers. And on the inside was for women, it was 10 and 10. So Prabhupada was heading towards the walking, all of a sudden he decided he wanted to go to the bathroom. Pile of night soil. And he went to the next one. The same thing. He turned around and he said that, you call yourselves brahmanas? Wherever a brahmana lives, it must be clean. So then, just at that time, Chaitirtha Das, he just had pulled up in his car, just come, you know, join, and Prabhupada was saying that he was smiling, you know. I think he knew what was happening. It wasn't the time to smile. He was smiling, and Prabhupada then just got on him. You call yourself a Brahmin? How can you allow this to happen? I just got here. You know? Just, wherever a Brahmin is, it must be clean. You know, just he wasn't going to give up. He was just making a very strong point. Didn't want anybody. He just kept pressing that point. And he actually told Jayatirtha that he had to. He was responsible as a Brahmana for being in this for the toilets being dirty, because he came and it was the Brahmana and it was dirty, and wherever Brahmana is, it has to be clean. And there was no excuse. In other words, that a Brahmana should actually feel responsible wherever he goes to seeing that everything is kept at a certain standard. They couldn't live in a messy place or a dirty place. Prabhupada's point. So Prabhupada, he was really insistent on this cleanliness, teaching cleanliness. And he'd go to the kitchen and he'd look at it And he wanted to really get the highest standard of cleanliness. So he just, he'd say, it's not clean or something. So then that devotee said, cleaned like a marathon, just scrubbed and cleaned. It was completely cleaned. And he came back the next day. He looked at everything. And he went through the whole kitchen, which is like spotless. He came out, and on the stairway, when they had constructed the building, it was colored cement. But when they plastered the wall, a piece of gray cement had fallen and landed on the colored cement. And he said, what is that? Dirt! Clean it now! So then, you know, I went down with a brush or something to screen, but it was cement. It was completely murdered. And he just see. instead, you know, he said, just see. It's like it was so caked on. By that time, I was practically in tears, you know. And then, promise it up. All right. Cement. First. Then I remember that we were crushing sugar cane one year. And so they cut the sugar cane stalks from the field and they were piling it up by the second gate, taking it across the road and like crushing it and cooking it down into jaggery across the road. Prabhupada was walking there. Now in India, the village people, they take the sugar cane and take off the skin of it. And they chew the inside like a candy or something. But sugar cane, you chew it, and then you suck it, kind of. And you get the juice out, and you spit out the pulp. So there's a little, you know, everyone, all the people by that place where all a bunch of grihasthas were living. So the place was, like, scattered with these things. And Prabhupada complained, you know, that this is, why they should clean up after themselves. Why do they spit everywhere? And like he went in the kitchen. In the meantime, they swept it right next to the boga, uncut, uncrushed, you know, raw sugar cane stalks. Like Prabhupada came out, came back, and then the man who was sweeping was an older Indian gentleman. And he just said, "And you call yourself a Hindu? You're sweeping the spittings by the side of the sugarcane, the boga, then you're going to crush and offer that to God, to Krishna." He just kept hammering in on him. "And you consider yourself?" He says, you're not coming to the temple to go back to Godhead. You're coming here to go to hell. You're coming here and committing aparadhas, and then you'll go to hell. You're born in India, you don't know not to sweep the spittings next to the unoffered sugar cane?" And Prabhupada would latch on someone, just like, just one let up. So then, meanwhile, a little two-year-old baby, I think he was stark naked with a little string around his belly. Like they do in India sometimes, they just wear like a thread. Just a little tot, I mean, completely, or maybe he was wearing panties. But I mean, it's just like, you know, probably didn't even know how to speak. Just a little kid, you know. He's running by chewing on a sugar cane. Chewing and spitting, you know. So this guy goes and grabs the sugar cane from the baby. The baby starts bawling, you know. "Took my sugar cane, you know." Can't even just cry. Just a little baby, you know. She drags it off. Takes, you know, and then Prabhupada said in Bengali, "To me, ustari corona." It's like it's such a sarcastic remark. Like, it's very hard to translate. But, like, they call Ustad Ali Akbar Khan, or the top tabla player in the world, they call him Ustad. It means, like, the guru of musicians. They call him Ustad. So like, you know, like the king of all the coaches or something like that. So don't, you know, like, Here, you know, he made a mistake. He's being chastised. A little innocent baby goes by, grabs the candy away from the baby to try to show, like, now I'm really vigilant, you know, after he completely blew it. So he said, don't, like, try to impress me by playing like you're the, you know, the big coaches, the big, you know, the big guru, or, you know, the ustad, the big expert teacher. But, I mean, it's real hard to translate it, but it's just like a... Because it's... I don't know how, in the idiom exactly, but to me, ustadi korona. Don't be a show off, you know. Don't show off, something like that kind of, you know. Don't show off. No. After neglecting your duty, then you know, some, anyways, the kid, the 2-year-old baby, is like, it doesn't, you know. Even, now he becomes vigilant, he's going to show. So like this, sometimes Prabhupada, by chastising, sometimes by criticizing, sometimes by satire, sometimes by joking, he would teach the disciples. One time, there was one of his, one sannyasi wrote some, Janardin or something, someone, he wrote, said, I'm your godbrother. Sannyasi, I want to stay in your temple. I said, Prabhupada, one of your godbrothers wants to stay. He said, how do I know he's my godbrother? He said, Bhakti Siddhanta, I got thousands of disciples. So he wrote again, and so then Prabhupada, he came by then one, and he asked, I want to stay. So then Prabhupada, didn't like the way it looked. A real kind of Indian sadhu profile, real dirty clothes, and poor kind of uncultured type appearance. He said, no, I'm your godbrother, I want to stay, I do bhajan and kirtan. So Prabhupada said we could put him up in one of the asbestos tiled roof rooms on the front wall. So then, Prabhupada said that he should come to Mangal Arati, he should attend the programs, he should. So he wrote, this man wrote a letter to Prabhupada, that I'm here, your godbrother, I'm living, but your disciples are not giving me any milk. They're not giving me, you know, this, they're not giving, they started making a whole, you know, like, I wrote some letter to Prabhupada, little note, how he wasn't getting this, he wasn't getting that, you know, making his demands. So next day, soon after that, Prabhupada was going in the front, and he was looking, he did a spot inspection of all the grihastha quarters. Just walking down and at random, with his cane, knock the door open, see what was the... So he was a little frustrated by the... He said it wasn't neat and clean enough. He said that, you know, they don't chant Hare Krishna very well, but at least they should be clean. I mean, if they work all day, and if they're very clean, then, all right, then we can tolerate even. But at least they have to be clean and attend the program. That was the minimum standard for anyone to stay there. And, you know, beyond that, then they should chant, you know, before they could be considered for initiation. But he was especially stressing they had to be very clean. And then he came and there was one door shut. He said, whose room is this? They said, this is, you know, your godbrother. He looked at his watch. He says, you know, at that time it was like already 7 or 8 o'clock. It was light out, you know. So why is the door shut? Bap, bap, bap. Hit his cane on the door. And the door, after a long time, bap, 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 you know, gradually creaked open. There the guy came out with all the white gook in his eyes, you know. Just like, you know, someone was just asleep, you know, really, you know, like completely just looked out, you know, kind of all drowsy with, you know, the sandman and the ice and the whole thing. And Prabhupada took one look at him and just said, And he's complaining, no milk, no this. 8 o'clock and he's still asleep, you know. So we don't need him. It's not a free hotel. He repeatedly said, it's not a free hotel. Don't think it's a free hotel. To work, keep your, make your keep. So do some service for Krishna. If you will do some service, then you can stay. He made a comparison of having a house filled with cows that don't give milk. He says it's better to buy milk from the market than have a barn filled with cows that don't give any milk. If you buy milk from the market, you just have to pay cash. But if you have a barn full of cows that they don't give milk, you got to feed them, plus you got to still go to the market and buy milk. He said you can maintain someone even if it's troublesome. If they're doing something. But if they're just a liability, then what's the use? Heard that example in several contexts. One thing that Prabhupada was very sensitive. I mean, he never actually deep sleep. He would always just take rest, and at the drop of a hat, just at the drop of any, just he'd immediately just jump up, and he'd be wide awake. Never show any symptom of drowsiness. Sometimes, of course, during class or something, if it was arduous journey or something, he might appear to just doze for a second or something, but when it was different. But when he didn't really know what was happening then, when he'd lay down, all of a sudden he'd just jump right up. And he would hear if on the, he was on the second floor, if someone on the fourth floor slammed their door, he'd ring his bell for the servant and say that, who slammed the door? It goes through my heart like an arrow. He had a servant staying next to him. One of the secretaries used to snore at night. Prabhupada, he'd ring his bell. I wasn't there, but I heard that he would make a complaint. Probably Satsurup Goswami could say more because he was a direct secretary than while I was just managing my airport. I remember that the secretary was snoring, had to go at the end of the floor, 5 rooms down. And then I think finally he was sent upstairs to the next floor up. It's probably such an ear that he could hear the snoring even from 100 feet through 5 walls. You know. It's very sensitive to sound. Then right next door, the secretary would be typing. And they said, Prabhupada doesn't disturb you. He said, they're doing work. Krishna's work. I didn't disturb him so much. Sometimes the kirtan would be going downstairs. And they said, Prabhupada, does that disturb you, the kirtan? He says, no. Krishna's name. But slamming doors and snoring, things like, you know, in the mode of ignorance, that didn't like. Then, I remember one time I was sitting in the room, and some door, you see, the thing was that the Mayapur building is constructed in such a way that it's facing east-west, and the wind blows south-north, north-south. And so the wind would go racing through the rooms. You had a tremendous breeze. And then if the door window wasn't latched, then the wind would pick the door and bam, it just slam. Because the whole building is made out of reinforced concrete. You know, any part you could, if you hit, even now, I mean, if you hit with a hammer on one part of the building, you can hear it on the other end because it's all one solid, you know, reinforced concrete, steel and concrete. So, continuous, the Prabhupada had he told us, had little latches put in, little called club, some kind of, I forget, it's a little wedge that's on a hinge that fits in the door, so when you open it, you flip that in, and then the door catches on that. But continuously, devotees would forget to put that wedge in place. And then gradually, the wind would catch the door, it edged forward, gradually, and the further it went out, like a sail, then the more wind it would catch and go faster. Finally, when it was like 45 degree angle, the wind would catch it, bam! And Prabhupada, his bell, shh. Who is that rascal? Who is? And then we'd have to search the entire building to find who slammed their door so that it wouldn't happen again. You know, nobody would admit. Then I remember one time, I was sitting in and talking with Srila Prabhupada, and bam, a door slammed. Prabhupada rang his bell, called, and Satsarupa Goswami came in, and he said, why are these doors slamming again? And actually, at that time, so it was the next room, it was Satsarupa Goswami's door. So he said, Prabhupada, just the wind just caught it, you know, it was. And Prabhupada said, you know, be careful, don't do this again. You know? Like he was really, you know, visibly very, you know, upset. And so then as Satsarupa Goswami was leaving, the door slipped from his hands. Bam! It slammed right there just at that time. Oh. And then, you know, that, you know, I remember he came in and, you know, paid his obeisance and he was really upset. I mean, he apologized immediately. Very intense situation. Because the whole point was that everyone in the building, they should be conscious of the deities of the spiritual master. Plus, it's not too good for the building if doors keep slamming. Plus, especially, that they should be conscious that Prabhupada was there. And they should be conscious, because when doors slam, it's about 10 times the door will fall apart. I mean, it's all not meant for being slammed. But even more important is to be conscious of the spiritual master. About that time, there was an attack in the village in Mayapur. In one householder's house, a gang of dacoits, armed robbers, bandits attacked with pipe guns and homemade bombs. They get some kind of explosive, contact explosive, and they put little pieces of iron scraps. They wrap it up with jute twine, and it becomes like about the size of a hardball. And they throw that. Wherever it hits, it explodes and throws the shrapnel everywhere. If somebody's within about 5-6 feet, he'll lose the arm of him. If it hits somebody, he may die. Or if it hits his arm, and you blow your arm off. A bigger bomb than that is what hit Raghav Pandit, Prabhu, and blew his leg off in the recent attack in our temple. So that night there was bomb, 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 you know, all the explosions going. So in the morning I went to see. I wanted to see that, what were their modus operandi, everything. They were concerned with Prabhupada being there. And I brought back some of the shrapnel from the bombs. Just then Prabhupada calls, and then he wanted a report. And so I showed him this thing, and this was the situation. So then Prabhupada told us that we should get some guns. Which in India is a big ordeal. You have to get license to apply through the government, go through a lot of red tape to get a gun. It's not so easy. Prabhupada said that once Narada Muni had a disciple who was a cobra snake, and that when he became a Vaishnava, got initiation, so he became non-violent. So all the kids in the neighborhood, they knew that he was a Vaishnava, so they'd spit on him, throw sticks, you know, little pebbles, just harass him. Because you know he wouldn't bite. He was a Vaishnava, non-violent. So Narada Muni came and said that, saw that this cobra was really, you know, in a bad state of consciousness. He said, why, what's the matter? And he explained, you know, this whole situation, that he was always being harassed by the kids. So then Narada Muni told him that, no, you can't show your fush. Just don't bite. So then whenever the kids would get too wise, he'd go, push up, and then they all get scared and run off. So this way he felt quite happy after that. No, I don't know. People kept a good distance. So Prabhupada said that like that, we should have guns and we should frequently fire them off, you know, in the air. And this way, keep the jackrabbits to stay away from us. We keep a guard, a watch. So then, we got two guns on license. Then Prabhupada had us standing on watch. So I divided the temple up into crews. We had about 20 devotees, and each devotee had to stand watch. So we had the Arjuna watch, the Hanuman watch, the Bhimsen, you know, we had different groups. And they'd take turns. And there were so many, you know, because the buildings and everything, not all of the railings on the building were constructed, so sometimes the devotee would be walking, and at 1 or 2 in the morning, especially if you work during the day, you're trying to stay up and watch, you'd hear and see things. You don't know whether really they were there or not. Sometimes they'd doze off and they'd wake up with 1 foot off the side of the building, a 3-story straight drop, 1 foot on, wake up and just somehow, you know. So, but somehow they were keeping this watch. And then on some occasions, Prabhupada would get up and he'd be up translating and he'd just go out with his flashlight and he would inspect the watch to see if they were really staying up or not. So I remember one time, Sadanya Swami could give the full detail. Sadanya Swami came back late from doing something, and so they had saved him some prasad, some chapatis with jaggery, and a leaf in a banana leaf plate. So in India, if you leave anything out for 10 minutes, so what to speak of for an hour or two, the ants have got ESP. Out of nowhere, they just come, ta 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 ta, they just, you know, brigades of them, out of nowhere. I mean, if you see, in the night, the bugs fall, by the morning, they'll be all be carried away by the ants. They're just very industrious. So somehow his gore became covered with ants, especially they eat gore or jaggery. But he was hungry, so he's trying to, like, pick off the ants or something from his gore. This is what we're eating. This is our diet in India. Little raw bread and a little jaggery, you know, evening snack. In the meantime, all of a sudden, he saw the blinding light in his face. You know, who is it? Who is it? And he got angry, you know, because the light was flashing in his eyes. He's like, who is doing this? Who is it? He's screaming out, you know. And then the you know, he flashed his flashlight and saw there was Prabhupada. Prabhupada! You know, hits the deck, pays his obeisances, you know. Prabhupada says, what are you doing, you know? he says, well, I'm on watch. He says, you're on watch? You know? So I was just, how hungry I was just, you know. Prabhupada said, so you stay awake or something, you know, just said something, you know, went off, you know, kind of hid this ant-filled chapati and. So then either later that night or maybe another night, I can't remember exactly. I think the same night, Saranya Swami was going around the veranda, you know, with the flashlight looking on all the sides, see that nobody was coming out. You know how when you sense that someone's there, you can feel it's day, you know, completely dark, and you feel that someone is there. You get that feeling, you know. Look around. One side to the next. Then he sensed that there was someone right under the stairway. It's like, crouch down. Flash his flashlight. There was Srila Prabhupada. Crouched down, watching him. Prabhupada! Prabhupada stood up and said, I was just checking on you. Disciples all over the world, they might try to kidnap him, hold him for a ransom. He was concerned that some demons might try to do that.
Prabhupada would rectify the situation and help them how to work in India, what they should do and how to avoid getting cheated in the early days when we started off in Mayapur and there's a famous one about them stealing the banana leaves from the Bombay temple. The workers were taking the banana leaves for the garbage and then in Vrindavan, they were taking the garbage from the kitchen. Prabhupada stopped them from taking the garbage. So they were feeding it to their cows. Prabhupada said, we can feed it to our cows. Small little things that the Western devotees considered insignificant.
Remember one day Prabhupada was sitting in his room and he heard the sound of kids talking and dogs growling. Prabhupada got up, walked over to the side of his veranda on the third floor, looked down. He called me over. And where the devotees had been eating and where they threw their leaf plates, instead of plastic or paper plates, they used the banana leaves. We threw in a big, like, a pit. There were some dogs digging through it to see if they could get a morsel of food. A bunch of little 3, 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old kids with sticks fighting the dogs off and trying to get the morsels of food from the garbage pile and eating it. Prabhupada saw that and he said they must really be hungry. To fight over the garbage pile of food that you threw away with dogs. So they must be very hungry. So then at that time he said, actually, practically, I think he was crying at that time. And he said that we should arrange that within 10 miles of the temple, 10 miles or 10 kilometers, I forget, that no one should go hungry. That this is the house of Krishna, Krishna's God. So a real temple means that if your son is there with nearby the father, he won't starve. The father's going to feed the son if he's wealthy. So because Krishna is the Supreme Lord, he's the Supreme Father, they're living in the proximity of his temple. The real symptom of a temple is that everyone in that area no one should go hungry. They can get prasadam. So then he ordered us to start distributing prasadam. If ISKCON Food Relief took off in a big way, then Prabhupada organized that regularly there should be mass prasad distribution at Mayapur. Sometime after. Before they were doing it on a smaller scale, but he wanted it in a bigger way. What was the thing you asked?
Someone was taking cement after it had been bought by the devotees and painted the cement. I can't remember all the details.
I mean, there's 1,001 ways that we were tried to be cheated, and we caught people cheating us. Sometimes Prabhupada would ask how much something cost. And if the devotee said, oh, that's very cheap. And sometimes Prabhupada would say, damn cheap, Baba. You are damn cheap, Baba. They told this story about anyone who comes from the city, all the country folk call him Babu. It's like kind of a slang for white collar worker or gentleman. You see, it's not exactly like city slicker, but kind of a slang term, but it means someone who not very from the country context. Used by a country folk, it would mean a guy that's pretty unaware of how things go on in the rural scene. So, in the city, papaya costs two rupees per papaya. So, the city slicker came to the country. And there was some guy sitting there selling papayas. So he said, how much? And the person looked at him and said, 50 paisa, half a rupee each. Damn cheap. So he bought 4. And the guy was really happy, smiling. He said, damn cheap. And then, so the guy took his papayas and then he was crossing the river and someone asked him, how much did you pay for the papayas? You know, he says, damn cheap. And then he said, damn, how much? He said, only 50 paisa, 50 cents, you know, half a rupee. Half a rupee! In this village, papaya goes for 1 anna, 6 cents a piece. Damn cheap, Babu. Prabhupada said, you're just like that. You're coming from a rich country. They tell you a price, you think, oh, this is very cheap. You don't know the real price. You're all damn cheap, Babus. Then there was a time. You must have that story about the smelling the machines. It was Shamsunda used to always tell Prabhupada the war is coming very soon, you have to do something. So then one time Prabhupada said, all right, we'll close down all the temples and we'll all go to Vrindavan and Mayapur, send the Ganges and chant japa and wait for the bombs to come. We just chant Hare Krishna and go back to God. And when he said that, then Shyam Sundar thought about it, and he got really, it's like sweat pouring down. So the Prabhupada said, I'm a city boy. I can't sleep at night unless I hear a refrigerator. Some bus or some refrigerated motor sounds. I can't sleep at night. Mayapur Vrindavan. You know, it was like, it was really petrifying for him. And Prabhupada laughed. He told this little story. At one time there was a grihastha, and he called out. You know, the Vedic system, before the householder would eat, he would call three times if anyone was hungry. So he called out. The third time he saw a fisherman coming with his basket. He said, are you hungry? Come and take some. Have you eaten yet? He said, no. Then come and take your meal. He said, no, I'm a fisherman. That's all right. You're hungry. It's my duty. Come. But just leave your basket outside. Basket, you know, they're all dry scales. You know how this fish basket stink? Like a skunk or something. Especially if you ever see these baskets where they carry the sun-dried fish or the smoked fish. My goodness. It just smells like the, you know, armpit of hell or something. It's terrible. Stench. So he left his basket outside, he came in, washed his hand. The householder gave him a seat out in his courtyard. Brought a meal and fed him. Then he only took his meal. So by that time it was getting to be already dusk. He said, where do you live? And he lived some distance away. He said, well, why don't you stay here tonight and go in the morning? He insisted. He was very hospitable. So then, in India, there's a Vedic saying, Otiti Narayan. You should treat an unexpected guest just as if Narayan came to your house. That type of hospitality. It's called Otiti Seva, service of guests, travelers. So then, that fisherman was sleeping. Laid down, and the householder laid down. In the middle of the night, the householder had a call of nature, so he went out to pass water. Then he saw that this fisherman was tossing and turning and tossing and turning. He said, what's the matter? You haven't been able to sleep. He said, no, I haven't slept a wink. He said, well, what's the matter? You're a guest in my house. You know, we don't want you to be uncomfortable. Why can't you sleep? And he said that for so many years, my constant companion is my basket. Without the smell of my basket near me, I can't get to sleep at night. So then the householder said, all right, bring your basket in. Then he laid down with the basket, and he could go immediately. Prabhupada was laughing and laughing, hitting his leg. He said, you Westerners are just like that, unless you smell a machine. A little grease, some oil, some machine smell, you can't sleep. Just like that fisherman. You have to have some telephone or some kind of machine, then you can.
It does sound like the bikers, you know, like the camp out they used to sleep underneath the bike and the drippings would drip down.
Some of that nectar drops. No, there was one girl in the New Tolavan farm from Washington, D.C. She said, how do you like it here? She said, I haven't been able to sleep for a week. Why? She says, no buses, no people screaming in the street, no sirens. She says, so quiet. How do you get to sleep when it's that quiet? especially like New York or in Washington. We just stayed one day for a ride out to New York. Every 10 minutes by the window, there was two fire trucks came. Some nut was trying to jump off the building. They had to, then there was ambulances going by. Some drunk was vomiting and screaming. It's just continuous thing, you know. So you can... My servant, you know, he was saying, oh, it's so noisy here. And every time one of the sirens would go by, you know, it's like, you know, it's going right through the living room. So after, you know, growing up in that environment, you know, I could, you know, just from that I could understand. I just, you know, she said she couldn't sleep. The telephone is too quiet. She's just getting used to it after a week. People get conditioned to this. I mean, there was recently in Hong Kong, maybe it was in England, that there was one man was working with the railway. So at 65, you know, he was retirement or 60 years old. So he was living in the railway quarters right by the yard. So then they transferred him out and they take him to the hospital. He didn't sleep for about 2 months. Couldn't sleep, couldn't eat. And the doctor, the psychiatrist that diagnosed him, that because his whole life for 30 years he was right next to the yard of the railway, that unless his house was shaking by the trains going by, that he couldn't, it was like he was so used to that if it didn't shake, I don't know how the whole shakes, you know. And that if he didn't have that, he couldn't sleep, he couldn't eat. And so he got like a court order or something to put him back in his old Venice. He regained his health and everything. People, they get conditioned, you know, Prabhupada. It's not, I mean, just, you know, but Prabhupada said that, you know, like you have to have him. It's actually not that far out. It's actually a lot of... people are, it's, you know, if the people realize how they become conditioned to such hellish existences, you know, then they could see the value of coming out and getting Krishna conscious association, living in natural in the farm, and getting out of that whole hell.